Do you like the Star Wars? We
that
certainly
is,
hope so.
That's a weird alternate.
That was almost creepy, wasn't it? Like, hey, do you like the Star Wars?
It's a little creepy.
Yeah, that was the creepy version.
That was like it's almost Steve Buscemi-esque in a way.
Oh, it is, isn't it? Yeah, kind of like, hey, you like the Star Wars? You have to kind of like pull your lips way back when you do Buscemi.
Oh, yeah.
You have to get that skeletal sort of...
Slick your hair back.
That's right. I just didn't have time to get my pomade. But... Oh, brother, where art thou, Brand? Dapper Dan.
Dapper Dan.
Before this turns into anything else, welcome to Hey Kids. What the? Welcome to, it's already
Seriously?
Turning into something else. Yes, welcome to the Rancor Pit.
We're all over the place.
I tell you. You know, I could just start over, but by God, we're going to leave this. We're going for it. We are all in at this point.
That's an epic opening right there.
And before we chew up any more of our time remaining on the opening, this is, of course, the Rancor Pit non-live version. And, of course, Eddie Medina is joining me as always.
Hello, everybody.
So Eddie was, if you saw the live show last week, Eddie was out. He was out at the fan days.
Yeah.
How was that? How was the...
As always, it was epic. You know, got to see a lot of familiar faces, got to meet a lot of new people, a lot of new contacts, got some commission work, and sold some stuff. So all in all, it was a good time.
Well, there you go. That's what it's all about. And,
yeah.
I would half consider trying to get out there, but there was just no way it was going to happen. And then when we had the live show, we did the Galactic Games. If you haven't seen that, it was a lot of fun. I took a page from Eddie's book there. And
I'm anxious to see it. I still have yet. And thank goodness no one has spoiled the outcome of it for me. One person actually sent me a private message, and I...
Oh, you just avoided it?
I saw the beginning part of it pop up, and I was like, okay,
yeah.
I will answer this person later, and so I... They're probably thinking, this jerk is not answering my...
No. So if you're listening to this episode, you now know why you haven't been answered.
That's right.
So... all of that said, we are. It was a lot of fun. If you didn't know already, Eddie had produced the first Galactic Games over a year ago.
Yeah,
and it was determined by me that it'd been over a year, so why don't we do that again? That was a really great idea. I've been meaning to do.
I'm glad you did, because if it's an annual thing that we're doing, we were almost out of our annual this time around.
Oh yeah, in fact, this was literally over a year, so it was important to do something with that before time got a little too far away from us. So, what we're doing here on the regular show, on the pre-recorded show, the not live version, we for the last two shows have talked about the top 10 between us, just between us. Our top 10, Eddie and my five favorite Star Wars action figures, first in the vintage line, then from the vastly larger, I guess, contemporary line, you'd call it, Power of the Force 2, straight up to just before Episode 7. We excluded Episode 7 because that just added more stuff to the pile.
Oh, of course.
And it's too new. Quite frankly, this is their freshman year. They don't need to be... we're not inviting them to the senior prom.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way it's working here.
Exactly.
So now we're going to do something even crazier.
Yeah.
Because we're expanding the scope a bit, but we are, I think, we're going to limit this to toys. But it's open season on non-action figure or non-3 and 3/4 inch action figure toys.
Yeah.
Or at least non-3 and 3/4 inch action figures. They can be related toys like the beast packs or other creatures, vehicles, ancillary things like the, Extreme Star Wars, the Unleashed.
Oh. Tactics.
You could throw in the tactics if you want.
Oh, okay, that's not what you're talking about. I thought you were talking about the tactics.
There was that... that series, they were more almost like low-end statuary.
Yeah.
That was the Star Wars Unleashed. The original incarnation of Star Wars Unleashed, was introduced about the time of episode 2, I believe.
Yeah.
And they were trying to do, intrinsically the idea was kind of interesting, because it basically presented some stuff for about 20 or 25 bucks, whatever they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were about 20 bucks. Some really nice kind of static sculpts of characters in a pose that sometimes was a little bit questionable.
Yeah.
This was about the time, oddly enough, this was the year of the nipple.
Uh-huh.
Because it was about this time, or the era of the nipple, that McFarlane Toys had released in their Movie Maniacs line Sill from the movie that escapes Species.
Yeah.
The H.R. Geiger designed creature from that movie.
Yeah.
On screen, her alien boobage is, shall we say, a little nipply.
Yeah, of course.
And that was actually released. And
hastily
replaced with a less overt, not 100% movie accurate version.
So, we actually got a Natasha Henstridge plastic nipple toy?
That is the oddest way to say that, but yet, strangely, the perfect way to express.
Well, is that what you're saying? That it actually had the sculpted nipples on the McFarlane figure?
Yes, it did.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was quite... And then, I mean, almost in trying to make the sharpest contrast possible, the breast-style area on the figure that replaced it was drastically downplayed.
Okay.
I mean, right down to the, you know, just not even trying to capture the shape of a breast, much less certain features that should never have left the factory. And the reason I bring that up is the very first Unleashed, and I do promise we will get to the top five for each of us very soon, the very first Padme, version of Padme that they did for the... Unleashed line was invoking the bare midriff Geonosian arena thing. So it's her looking all powerful and, you know, strong female lead character, except that it's Lucas written and directed feature, so it sucks all the strong female lead character out of it.
Mm-hmm.
At least post episode 4 anyway. And so she, you know, she's there wielding the giant droid gun, and I think she's got the chain still on her. And apparently, the Geonosian arena, it was pretty chilly there that day.
I'm looking at the figure now.
Oh,
wow.
There you go.
And it looks nothing like Natalie Portman,
no,
actually.
Yeah, I think this was one of these things where they couldn't get away with, actually. She probably said, no way. But the original release, yet again, this was an example of somebody... This was like C-3PO's penis on the Topps cards. Somebody snuck this one through.
Yeah.
And then very promptly, that was replaced with a more kid-friendly version.
Yeah, she looks more like Liv Tyler than Natalie Portman.
Well, it's kind of like the old original Star Wars poster. They say, you know, that... Luke looks like Mark Hamill, but Leia doesn't look like Carrie Fisher at all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's true.
So maybe it was that sort of thing. Maybe they thought Liv Tyler was going to be...
And
perhaps she was perfectly fine with the whole nipplage thing.
I guess so.
So, I got a little sidetracked there, but there was a story that had to be told in the Star Wars... in the annals of Star Wars toys.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's funny because this very piece, I was actually looking at it in person last night. I was looking over the collection of Bobby Blakey, and he had his Unleashed stuff on the shelf, and so I was looking at all of them. I remember looking at the Padme and didn't notice the nipples.
He may not have the nipple version. I honestly can't tell you. I've seen this collection, but I don't think I ever registered. So you may well have seen what became colloquially known as Pole Dance Leia. If you look at the Unleashed Leia figure,
I definitely saw that one. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it just looks like she's about to do a dance at Glitter Gulch in Las Vegas or something. So, there you go. And I do dearly love, before we will finally move on, I do dearly love the fact that certain aspects of Star Wars get these wonderful little nicknames, like Monkey Face Leia, the original Power of the Force 2 Leia, or Pole Dance Leia, or one of my personal favorites. There is a Tops, and what's fun about this is actually has a purpose, because on Sunday, next Sunday, we will be talking about on the live show, it's in the cards, we're going to talk about Tops trading cards. And Eddie just found that out. So
as you could tell by my reaction.
Yes, indeed. I honestly, as God is my witness, I thought I told you.
I knew that topic was coming. I just didn't know at what point it was coming.
At least that's what I promised in the heat of...
Okay.
So, at any rate...
So this is for the next live show, is the trading card discussion. Yeah. Okay, let me go ahead
and get our act together.
Well, I was going to get Ben Burt to come on the show and talk about the sound effects, but I'll go ahead and cancel his appearance.
Yeah, that's all right. Who wants to hear about that?
Exactly.
Who wants to hear about that? But they...
Right.
There was a... I can't remember which artist. It may have been Dave Dorman. Did a piece where Han Solo is fighting this creature that looks like an otter.
An otter.
In fact, it looks like a giant otter wearing like some sort of costume from Barsoom, and our three fans of John Carter will get that. It was either that or Joe Jesko, one of the two. But anyway, it's Han Solo. He's like rearing back, just like he's going to punch this thing, and it's jumping up at him, and it became known as Otter Pop Han.
What?
You know, like the old Otter Pops.
Yeah.
But he looked like he was about to, punch him once. It became known as Otter Pop Han.
Oh, wow.
I'll have to see if I can find a picture of that trading card.
Yeah, I've never even heard of these things before. These nicknames.
That's right.
Obviously way out of the loop.
Well, in that case, let's move on to things that you probably know something about. And
sure.
While I stall for time. Actually, I am more or less prepared, but I'm going to stall for time later to... conjure up exactly where I want to land on this. But when it comes to the ancillary toys and such, I have to say that the first thing that pops in my head when I'm thinking of my top five is a creature that I wanted as a kid. So we got the Dewback. Why did we not get the Bantha? And, we've got Chewbacca. You can sculpt fur. We know that. We have a proof of concept. Why did you not do this? You did the stupid Wampa. And poorly, I might add.
Yeah, the weird step in his
He's a little jaunty gait there. He's like putting on the Ritz Wampa.
Yeah, not even. That would have been a step up from what we got.
Well, it's sort of like Peter Boyle and Young Frankenstein doing, putting on the Ritz. But the Bantha, which came out in the Power of the Force 2 line, or the post-Power of the Force 2 line, the very first version of the Bantha they did, Hasbro, Kenner, whoever it was at the time, I think by then it was Hasbro, hit the nail on the head. They delivered on every aspect. I think, technically maybe the horns were a little small, and... but, maybe this was a different Bantha.
Yeah.
But they captured everything about the Bantha and went all in with the rooted hair.
Yeah.
So this thing is, like, covered with doll hair. I think the only place it falls a little short, and it's been a while since I've messed with this thing, it may have... I can't recall if its legs were articulated.
Yeah.
I want to say they weren't, but I don't remember, and of course, sitting there on my shelf, it's too covered in fur to tell what its legs look like, but they got the idea of, they layered this thing, because you've got the Bantha body, and then they layer in the tons of hair and plug in the horns and lay the saddle on top of that.
Yeah.
And it's not just attached like the Dewback, it's plugged in. It's part of the thing. And then you got a little special Tusken Raider that was articulated enough to sit astride the thing.
Yeah.
But they've got the scale down very well. It's about the size of an elephant. And it was one of the really good piece. And if you've seen the live Ranker Pit, you know, we have the two pieces that were released simultaneously in the Beast Pack line was the Bantha and the Ranker Monster.
Yeah.
And that very first rubbery Ranker Monster was just a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
It could barely stand on its own feet, unlike its predecessor in the vintage line.
Yeah.
But for me, the Bantha, that was like a childhood dream. And then later on, I think Toys R Us commissioned a package set.
Yeah, the Attack of the Clones one, the Battle Pack.
And they had something, and it may have been Attack of the Clones, that had a Bantha.
Yeah, it came out during the Attack of the Clones era.
And for some reason, they used carpet remnants or something instead.
Yes.
Oh, the thing just looked awful.
And that's what I'm saying. It's so weird because with everything else Star Wars related, the early stuff was okay, but the stuff that we got later was much better. In the case of the Bantha, like you were saying, the Power of the Force Bantha, it was really well done. It looks very screen accurate to the point where you can't even see the eyes.
Exactly. And, yeah, you have to brush back the hair to see these beady little eyes behind it.
And it's got the
big lips sticking out.
Like, yes.
And it just caught everything.
With the Attack of the Clones version, which obviously came way later, it looks horrible because it looks, like you said, like a piece of shag carpet with the eyes cut out for eye holes.
That's right.
It almost reminds me of, like, if you were dressing up your dog for Halloween as a Bantha, and you can see the dog's eyes coming through the shag carpet.
Yeah, it's almost like the Bantha Pug.
It is. It's so weird.
Only the Bantha Pug looks better.
Yeah, that was actually the Attack of the Clones battle pack, because that would have been, like, the family of Tusken Raiders that Anakin wiped out.
Slaughtered like animals. If we were on the live show, you would actually have got that sound bite, because Anakin is constantly interrupting. In fact, during the game show, he's telling us all about how bad sand is.
Shut up, Anakin. Yeah, that was Hayden Christensen's Adam West moment, in my opinion.
Oh my gosh, I never thought about it. it's like
all of them. Robin, how dare they?
Yeah, that would be an interesting side-by-side, is to see scenes of the two, like, you know, like a shot from the strangely erotic scene in the Batman movie, which I guess because I'd always watched it on television.
Uh-huh.
When it came out on DVD, I'm like, oh my god, I didn't even remember this happening, where he's there with Miss Kitka, and I'm like, the dream is reaching its climax. Like, what the... So, on that note, Bantha.
Climaxing Batman here. Oh my gosh. Anyways, that's funny. But
there you have that.
Well, you know, you can look at this later, Cole, off mic, but I sent you a link. Someone actually did a side-by-side photo comparison of the Power of the Force Bantha and the Attack of the Clones Bantha.
You know, as you were warning me.
Uh-huh.
I made the fatal error of opening that.
Yeah, you see what I mean?
It is worse than I thought.
It is. I tell you, that's why I had to look it up, because and I just noticed that you can see his lizard-like tail poking out from the carpet.
Yeah, what was neat is I've seen some photos of the original costume that was put on the elephant, and
yes.
It does have this big flat spatulate tail.
Mm-hmm.
And they captured that as well. This does the side by side does kind of confirm my suspicion that it was not did not have articulated legs.
Mm-hmm.
At least seems to. But yes, that's dreadful.
It is.
And the saddle in the side by side is illustrates how they put the saddle way too far forward.
Yeah.
And painted it far too brightly.
But I think it's the same saddle that we got with the original Bantha.
It is. It's hard to tell because in the original, in the side-by-side, and we may go ahead and just steal this, the saddle's put farther back on the body.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you have the exact same saddle painted differently, but it's put so far up that mm-hmm. it almost looks like a different piece.
Yeah.
But, oh, that... Oh, that's awful, awful.
Yeah, it is.
It's like a stray poodle that hasn't been groomed in 7 months.
That's
Oh.
truly the response from the son of a veterinarian.
Yes, it is. There you have it.
Oh my.
Okay, so we'll leave the Bantha there.
I kind of went Last Crusade there for a minute and invoked the that's the cup of a carpenter son.
Oh,
As I said
this
that,
looks
I
like a
thought,
carpenter's cup. Yes,
yeah,
indeed.
exactly.
And ironically, originally they were just going to have a cup there that was for the band The Carpenters.
Oh, okay.
This looks like a carpenter's cup, but this looks more like what Jesus would have drunk out of,
Exactly.
because the carpenters hadn't been invented, hadn't been born yet.
Oh, goodness. So but yeah, your choice is the Bantha, the original Bantha.
The original,
Not the straight.
not the shaggy Bantha,
Yeah.
not the unwashed Bantha. But the thing is, you could restack that picture you sent
Yeah.
as a before and after.
Or
See, like, before you bathe your Bantha and after with this luxurious
that's true.
coat.
That's true.
That's why it's important to groom your Bantha.
Or if you reverse it, it could be like those SPCA things where they rescue
Oh, yeah.
people,
So you have the
and then this is
sanguine
what they look
music.
like now, the happy ending
Oh,
Bantha.
same thing. It reversed. It could be the, here was the poor stray Bantha, but it found a home, and look how
Yes.
happy it is. See, loose, sad Bantha, happy Bantha. Okay.
Wow.
We will move along because we have yet to hear of any. I'm down to four now. You're still up there at five, so we want to go ahead and get that moving.
Okay, well, the first thing I thought of when I thought of non-3 and 3/4 inch figures, toy related stuff, it's going to be the Kenner Ice Planet Hoth playset, where it's the white base, the white molded base, and it's got the cardboard backing. I know there's different variations, like there's one where it's the Rebel hangar, but the one I had as a kid was the cool one, where it was the 3D Snowwalker background, and it had
Okay.
the working elevator that you could put your figure on, and you could lift it up into the AT-AT, and it even had the die-cut windows that you could. It was a really cool set, and anybody who doesn't know, familiar with it, just to kind of back up, it starts off you have the white plastic base, and
What
to a
they
kid,
used there was the actual Land of the Jawas base.
yeah, actually, and I had that one too, but I think I just. Out of the two, I preferred this one more because I know they're virtually the same thing. Because with the other one, you got the sand crawler that had the working elevator that would go up into the sand crawler. But I think what sold it for me on this one was the fact that you got the gun turret as opposed to on the Land of the Jawas, you got just the capsule. And to me, the gun turret was a lot more exciting.
Oh, that's right. You have that radar laser cannon.
With the Land of the Jawas, what was clever about that is they had the little cave that R2 could hide in,
Yes.
and that was pretty cool. And it also dug on the Land of the Jawas. I'm going to end up talking about both. I'm going to get two for one here. The Land of the Jawas was cool because they had the little tread tracks going across the corner, which I
Yes.
thought was really clever. But I think again, if I had to pick out of the two, it has to be the Hoth one because of the gun turret number one. It had the little movable base, and I think, yeah, it had the thing where you could set your, in my case, the Hoth Han Solo on the figure holder, and you could put your snowtrooper, and it had like a little square where you would set one of the figure's feet on.
That is correct.
And when you move the lever, it looks like Han Solo's turn around and blast him, and then the snowtrooper shoots up. It's like a catapult almost.
Yeah, the idea was with Land of the Jawas, the interesting thing is that particular base got a lot of mileage.
Yeah.
It was designed to be the Land of the Jawas, so you have the treads there to represent where the sand crawler that you probably didn't own would be. There was that little lever mechanism with a rotating base, and you would have put a Jawa there and R2-D2 on the little platform.
Yeah. Oh, gotcha. Yeah,
And
yeah.
that would be the Jawa shooting R2. And what's wonderful about this as a Hoth playset is it almost invokes kind of a little like windswept the kind of ways you get like the little snowy dunes building up,
Yeah.
because there's this wonderful little depression there, and that depression, as you probably remember, was the escape pod.
The escape pod for the Jawas,
yeah,
yeah.
That's where the R2 and 3PO's escape pod would have nestled.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes a little more awkward with Hoth because the radar laser cannon isn't designed to nestle perfectly into that space.
That was kind of weird in a way. And as I should have looked up a picture of it before we started recording, but now that I'm looking at a picture now, I realize that the Hoth playset did actually have the tread tracks on it.
Yes, that was so annoying to me because I actually used to have this.
For some reason, I remember that was not on the Hoth one, but I'm wrong on that. One thing I do remember as a kid that bugged me, and if you're looking at the picture...
And the Tang treads didn't bug you?
Yeah. I didn't care. Cause,
yeah.
But, there between the figure stand and that little area where the figure stand and the little cave is at, it was that little mound, and at the top of the mound was almost like a manhole cover type thing.
Yeah, there's that little plug there.
And I don't remember that ever doing anything.
No, and I'm trying to recall if that replaced anything. I believe that the purpose of that was literally part of the trigger mechanism.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah, and unfortunately I don't own either of these sets anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
I may still have one of the bases I wound up with. But as I recall, I think part of the trigger mechanism is housed up in that little dune.
I wonder if that's...
And that
if that's
plug
the,
just sort of holds that lever in place, if I recall.
Yeah. Maybe that's it, because that always bugged me as a kid as why this is there. And I remember actually trying to pry it loose to see what the deal was with it.
Yeah, but I think you didn't assemble that yourself. That was all factory assembled. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not just completely grossly mistaken... No, actually, maybe you did. In the original Land of the Jawas, yes, you did, and that is part of the lever mechanism. Believe it or not, stumbled on someone had posted a picture of the instruction sheet.
Okay.
And the lever mechanism came in three parts that you had to put in yourself.
Oh, okay. Well, Vic must have put ours together because I don't remember doing that.
Sorry, four parts, actually, from the looks of things.
Oh, more for your money.
There you go. And I had forgotten that the interiors of these cardboard playsets had the little pegs for the footholds. There were, like in the Land of the Jawas, there were four little diamond-shaped holes punched in the underside of the the bottom of the chamber there.
Mm-hmm.
So you could actually, plug your figures in there.
Yeah, they
kind of
sat down.
Like they were going anywhere in that cramped quarters there.
Exactly. That's why I liked, and see, that's the thing that sold the Hoth set over the Jawa set to me, because it was more exciting to have a background that was an AT-AT, because I remember, like I said, they had the little windows cut out. I remember putting my AT-AT driver, AT-AT commander, in the little cockpit, there. You could sit him down in the headpiece.
Oh, and that's right. Yeah, and you have like his little window, like on the 747.
Or like the little, or keep on trucking or something. I don't know. Like, you just.
Yeah, he's like a truck driver.
Yeah, and, and again, like, that was almost just like an added value. Like, as a kid, as you could turn it around and actually have, like, a very plain, but still a playset interior of the AT-AT.
The Empire didn't pony up for much on the inside.
No, not really. It's almost like the old Westerns where the front of the saloon and all that was really elaborate.
But if you go outside, back, it's kind of dull.
It's just plyboard on the back.
Yeah. Oh, yes, this is like the backlot AT-AT.
It is. It's the backlot. But, and again, they had different versions. The one that I believe came later of the Hoth place said it was just like a two-dimensional Rebel hangar base, and that there was
correct.
Nothing
that,
added
that
to that.
That was actually part of, if I'm not mistaken, that one was part of a kind of box set.
Oh, okay.
You would get from Sears or JCPenney or somebody like that.
Okay.
I'm not 100% certain on that.
Well, that would make sense that they're kind of cutting costs. They had something more simplified for that.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
You went all in for.
Yeah, it was like this. I love the graphics, though. What was cool about both of those sets is the background graphic, that where you had just that two-dimensional backdrop. It had this sort of overarching icicle motif going. You could see the Falcon in the background.
Yeah.
A lineup of X-Wings, different... Mm-hmm. Snow speeders and rebels running around doing things, and even presumably Luke on the Tauntaun. reining in his tauntaun in this action pose that was just really kind of smashing in its own right.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, they were trying to do what they could there to punch that thing up. But it's the backdrop for that Ice Planet Hoth playset that is the first on your list tonight. That
yeah,
is really
definitely.
Actually it, kind of cool. Because it had a couple of snow speeders coming in on the rear flank.
Yep.
In the backdrop, it had...
There's a ton of action going on in the background.
Yeah, the rebels down in the trenches, the gun towers on one side. I think there's advancing snowtroopers on the other, if I'm not mistaken.
No, there's a failed AT-AT on fire.
Oh, that's right, yes.
And there's a snowspeeder about to go down in flames. A couple more snowspeeders are firing at the AT-ATs in the background. So, yeah, there's all sorts of action going on in the back.
And that the snowspeeder going down in flames, what's amazing about it is, like, one of the snowspeeders is oriented, the one that's firing is oriented upside down.
So
it's like it's in a barrel roll.
Yeah, exactly.
And the one that's going down is like Tokyo drifting its way down.
It is, and that's
it's
what
like
I mean.
This wonderful spin, and it just like adds so much.
Well, whoever the artist was really thought through what he wanted to do to invoke a lot of action in that scene.
Yeah, because it could have been just dull as mud.
Mm-hmm.
And in both cases with those anyway, you've got this incredible version of, you know, there was something going on there.
Well, and again, as a kid, that's what sold this set a little bit more than the Jawa set, because the Jawa set, even though it was cool that the background was shaped like the actual sandcrawler, it was just a sandcrawler. And with this, you know, for my imagination as a kid, it actually gave you more than just the AT-AT. It gave you like a story going on behind the AT-AT.
So you're going with, what is it, Ice, or Hoth Ice Planet?
That would be...
It's the Hoth Ice Planet playset!
What was cool about this, it fit very well with the other Hoth playset that I owned, which was the Gun Turret Probot set.
Oh, the Turret and Probot. That is beautiful. There were actually three distinct Hoth environments.
Yeah, the other one was like trenches or something. I'm not sure if I ever had that one, even though it looked really cool, you know, to own, because it was like it invoked like the World War II World War I kind of trenches, like where you had to, you know, hunker down and, you know.
Oh, and what's really neat is the sculpting on that one.
Yeah.
It's full of overlaid footprints.
Oh, really? On the trench one?
Yeah. So like down in the packed snow.
Nice.
Somebody really thought that out. I mean, you know, the jagged edges of the ice are pretty simplistic.
Yeah.
But yet the interior, somebody went to great lengths to make it look like, you know, rebels have been running back and forth through there.
Yeah.
And I guess later snowtroopers.
Mm-hmm. That is pretty cool.
And it had all these little exploding elements and stuff, because they love to blow things up at Kenner.
Well, that was what was cool about the Gun Turret Probot set, is like the Probot was stationed on a little staff.
Yeah.
And when the Gun Turret turned a certain way, it would cause, or maybe it was when you would move the figure, because they had the little figure stand that also moved back and forth.
Yeah,
you know,
it didn't have a lever, and the idea was that Han would be rotated around to fire at the Probot, and it would pop up off of its little stem.
It would pop off, and it would blow apart. Body, head, and legs could all, you know, blow apart at that point. So it was really cool. And as a kid, what was cool about the Gun Turret is that you got the little added bonus of having the actual housing of the turret, where you could actually open the door and put figures in.
Yeah,
there,
guys,
you
know? Could go inside and hang out.
It was a good complement to the Hoth Ice Planet Hoth playset.
Exactly. So that's a good choice, because it does invoke so many others. You kind of got like a forfer.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I did, even though I never owned the trench one.
That's right. Yeah, I don't currently have one, because the footprint is insanely large on that trench one.
Yeah.
And space isn't such a premium around here.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yes, Ice Planet Hoth.
Ice Planet Hoth is my first choice.
All right. Well, I am going to, in fact, rather much inspired by your choice there, I find myself inevitably turning toward one of the signature pieces of my collection because it was one that was lost to me. And then years later, actually I should say it was lost to me, but for one tiny accessory piece. Actually two pieces.
Yeah.
That somehow got separated from one of them rather deliberately, one of them rather accidentally. But the, I want to make sure I get the precise name. I love, one of the things I love about the vintage collection, and we didn't point out early on that we're going to go vintage, modern, there are no restrictions here. We're not going to turn this thing into a series that goes on for 20 episodes. So this one's going to be over all over the map. So, you know, don't be surprised if we're leaping about here from different eras.
Mm-hmm.
But what I love about the vintage series is they went out of their way to like make elaborate names for things, like the, you know, Ice Planet or Hoth Ice Planet or AT-AT Imperial Walker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the Death Star Space Station.
Mm-hmm.
When you saw a box of that magnitude under your tree in about 1978 at Christmas time, you pretty much knew the Death Star Space Station was likely inside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the Death Star was a really cool... We talked a bit about it on the previous episode, or I think on the live show.
Yeah, live show.
Yeah, on the live show where we're still waiting on those Death Star selfies.
I forgot about that.
I need to take one myself just to kind of sweeten the pot a bit. Or at least get the pot rolling. The Death Star was a unique thing because the idea of bringing Star Wars to market in action figures led to a lot of amazing innovations, from the early bird set being one of the most prevalent, to sell people a promise, just unheard of. But what's really unique is that the scale. And as the story goes, you know, some Kenner exec or president said, you know, make the figures about this big. And somebody ran over and measured, and it was 3.75 inches from index finger to thumb.
Mm-hmm.
When he was showing roughly how big things need to be. Because they had the foresight to realize that the real money was in accessorizing the toys.
Mm-hmm.
Very few toy companies, if any, had ever recognized that. And I think that somehow they probably realized, why is Barbie so popular? Because they accessorize the crap out of Barbie.
Oh, yeah.
But Barbie, you know, you can hit a price point with a Dream House or a Camaro or something like that. But you're, and I think they even gave her a Winnebago at one time. But, you know, you're not going to give her, like, an office,
yep,
the Barbie office block.
The Winnebago was of the line of the Walking Dead Barbie.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they literally predicted. People didn't know what it was back then. It was a terrible seller. And then
it
nowadays,
was
a very sought after collectible, the Walking Dead. I forgot about that.
That's right.
I remember in those days scratching our heads, Walking Dead Barbie? And she looks okay. And she. I mean, is this like some sort of low rent prison where Death Row is a camper?
And you're thinking, why is Ken wearing a necklace of ears around his
that
neck?
That was weird.
Yeah.
And it was also the only one of only two times Ken had a crossbow.
That's right.
The other was Ted Nugent Ken.
That's right. The Ted Nugent Ken. That
Ted
was
Nugent
old...
Ken was wildly more popular.
It was big in the southern states, for sure.
Absolutely. In fact, yeah, it was exclusive to southern Kmarts.
Right.
So, but the neat thing with the Death Star was it recognized there's only so much you can do.
Yeah.
How do we give you this iconic environment that, you know, an entire act of this film centers around?
Mm-hmm.
And very cleverly, let's just give you a slice of the pie.
Yeah.
So the wedge shape was rather brilliant because it everything radiates off of the elevator.
Yes.
I mean, the elevator itself in the movie, not particularly vital. However, the elevator as the toy allows you to move from level to level to level.
Mm-hmm.
And it recognizes the fact that the Death Star is replete with levels.
Yeah.
And so from the bottom, or actually let's start at the top. You've got this wonderful little latticework roof.
Yeah.
That really lets the sun in, and in the spring you can grow some nice ivy. So,
because ivy grows so well in space.
Space ivy.
Oh, okay.
I didn't think I'd have to point that out, but yes, space ivy. But they couple this upper level, they give you the very awkward looking gun station, which actually is strangely movie accurate.
Yeah.
Apart from the chair, which is just a little off script.
Why do you say it's awkward?
It's just an unusual looking design.
Okay.
I mean, for Star Wars, it probably isn't all that awkward, but it is kind of an unusual looking design element overall.
Mm, okay.
It's like one of the, if you look at the towers, you know, they're more utilitarian.
Yeah.
And the actual seated gunner type gun just seems to have all kinds of points and fiddly bits and
I knew you were going to say fiddly bits. I knew it.
You're coaxing that out. That's,
yeah.
That's what that was all about.
Uh-huh.
And like so many things, you had to have the explosive element.
Yeah.
So
oh, that's
a little,
right.
A spring-loaded trigger in the base that would knock the gun out so that as Luke flies by, he can blow a gunner up. But what's interesting about that is then they incorporated a little sloping ramp and a narrow catwalk so they could throw the little hub station there where Ben can go and turn off the tractor beam.
Yeah, that was always clever to me to have that in there.
So they've combined a couple of elements that weren't necessarily anywhere near each other.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go down to level 3. This is where you have housewares. I was thinking
Just real quick, it's been a number of years. So Vic still has our Death Star, so it's been a while since I've actually toyed around with it.
Uh-huh.
But if I remember correctly, when you move the laser cannon back and forth, it would make a clicking noise?
Yes, it does.
It did have the
Kenner click, which the robot playset, the turret, had the click as well.
Yeah, yeah. The
little card in the spokes kind of clicking.
Like the power droid. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, that's what I thought.
I'm glad you brought that up. So on level 3, you have the element there was the chasm.
Yeah.
Which ironically is right above the control room.
It's not such a treacherous fall after all.
Yeah. Not
unless, you fall right into, like, Imperial.
You might sprain your ankle, though. But yeah, you'd be in the middle of the control room. But there was, like, a little rope, little plastic element that was supposed to be the rope that they swing across on. And I, ironically, that is one of the only pieces I still had from my original Death Star.
Oh, wow. That's usually the piece that people lose first.
Exactly.
That's funny.
And it wasn't until after I bought a Death Star at a convention.
Mm-hmm.
I stand corrected. There were 3 pieces I had left. I did not realize I still had that. Mm-hmm. I had in an envelope, in a manila envelope for many years, the 2 backdrop pieces.
Oh, okay.
Because I didn't like them as a kid. So mm-hmm. I'd always display without, because they kind of got in the way, depending on which way you had the thing oriented.
I could see that.
The neat thing with that was they were these little cardboard inserts that slotted into little runners on each level.
On level 2 and 3.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Between 2 and 3 and 3 and 4, there were little runners, and you could slide this backdrop. But what's really clever is they printed it on both sides, so the exterior side has all these little tchotchkes and things going on that look like the surface of the Death Star.
Yeah.
And then the interiors have different displays and stuff. Like one of them invokes the display of the Death Star coming around Yavin.
Yeah, that's what I thought I remembered too.
And trying to see it. And then like there's a down in the control room level, there is a the graphic on one side represents the area where Han and Luke and 3PO all go.
Yeah.
And then there's a big screen with an X-Wing and a TIE fighter.
That's like, what I thought.
They're like watching the battle on the big Toshiba.
Or they just, yeah, they just popped in a VHS of Star Wars and they're watching.
Yeah, well, it was like Spaceballs.
Exactly.
Go through and find the episode and watch it. And then you had this extending bridge, which was a nice touch because you never actually see the bridges extend. Mm-hmm. But you have the little rope there for the chasm, but I still had the backdrop pieces, which this, years and years later, after I met Catherine, I found at a convention we were actually selling as dealers, and I walked past another dealer's table, and I see the entire Death Star set up there, minus the cardboard inserts, minus the rope.
Oh, that's funny.
Otherwise, it's all set up, and stuck at the very top is a little sticker that says $20.
Oh, wow.
That stopped me in my tracks.
Just $20.
Yeah, in any era. It was probably less than I paid for it new.
Exactly. Wow.
And I looked over and I said, this is $20? And I said, yeah, sold. I'm like, I'm buying this now. So I was able to replace. The level below that is really kind of neat because you've got like these two little control room consoles that are just sort of little like angles.
Mm-hmm.
They're not quite like those. I wish that Hasbro would do something with that really cool, like, complete surround control thing.
Yeah.
It just reminds me of, like, Carol and Bob Newhart.
Mm-hmm.
Only, like, if there was no way out. All you figure is, like, when you go there, the Death Squad commander has to, like, get inside this little elevator underneath and go up.
Yeah.
Because there is no getting out of that control room. But, you know, you got this control room area, and it has a trap door in it that allows you to go drop down into level one, the trash compactor. And the trash compactor, you've got your trash was a bunch of brightly colored foam shapes.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a crank, this big awkward crank where you could crank the back wall of the trash compactor. And the nice thing is you have some lovely observation windows on both sides. People can watch the death of the heroes, but they
exactly.
get out, and it has a little pop-down door.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, exactly. The sculpt on the door is really cool because it does look very much like the Death Star trash compactor door. And there was a trash monster. Well, no one knew what the trash monster looked like, so you get this weird...
Nessie.
Yeah, you get like Nessie's love child with some creature from Ed Big Daddy Roth's Hot Rods.
No!
It's like Nessie and Ratfink had a child. This is what you
I love it. I'm loving this. This is probably one of our best moments on the show ever. It's the Dianoga, Big Daddy Roth, Ratfink, Dianoga.
Yeah, so if you're familiar with the trash monster as it was known then, you're probably seeing exactly this. And the other neat thing was that the elevator itself had a rotating door.
Yeah.
So you could, like, put the figures in and rotate it, and it would be like the door would be closed on both sides. And the elevator was open on the level one on both sides, but only open the interior on the other levels.
Yeah.
So with that, I give you, and then you also have these little support walls on either side of the base there, for on either side of the trash compactor.
Yeah.
And even that had, like, little runners where, you know, it locked into place. It was designed to go in one way, and that was it.
Exactly.
So you have this whole environment that gives you so many elements, and it was, in fact, the trash monster was the only other piece I still had that was missing.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I got that thing home, I put the cardboard inserts in, I put the trash monster in. And years later, I was rooting around and found this box that was a from a little tiny Star Blazers model kit.
Mm-hmm.
Japanese import model kit I had. And I opened the thing up. I'm like, wow, I don't remember still keeping this. And I opened it up, and inside was the tubing from the droid factory.
Oh, wow.
And the rope from the Death Star.
Nice.
And that is how I managed to complete Death Star.
Nice.
So with that, cool. Death Star Space Station.
Yeah.
Knocks another one out of my top five.
That's a good choice. I think that would have been in a lot of people's top five, mine included. So, all right, so moving on, let me see. I'm going to go with the original X-Wing vehicle, the original X-Wing fighter.
The vintage X-Wing.
Vintage X-Wing. And normally I probably would have chosen the Millennium Falcon over this, but to be fair, I didn't get the Millennium Falcon until way later, and the X-Wing plays a much bigger part of my childhood in doing the action figure play.
So you've got some history there with the X-Wing.
Yeah, we ran that X-Wing to death to the point where by the time we were done with it, I think only two of the wings were still attached. And that's because we were careful with our toys. It's just, that's how much we played with it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But there were so many cool elements to this thing. Just right off the cockpit, number one, is like, that's always, to a five-year-old would be just astounding that you could pop open this clear cockpit and put your X-Wing Luke in and close it. But on top of that, was cool is you had the mock R2-D2 figure built into it, just the top of the dome, even though it's very simplistic in its design.
Yeah, that you just basically get the shape and the color scheme, but nothing else.
Yeah.
You don't even get the eyes or anything
like that. Exactly. But what was cool is that doubled as a button, so when you depressed his head, the X-Wing foils would just pop open, you know.
And to me, even as, you know, an older child at the time, mm-hmm. that was amazing engineering.
Yeah.
I mean, that should have been something you just manually opened and closed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they work out this mechanism.
Yeah.
Where not only would it open, but it would lock.
Oh, yeah, it would lock into place.
And you had to unlock it mm-hmm. to close them back.
Well, is the unlocking button, is that the little blue button behind R2?
That is correct. Yeah,
that's what I thought.
Element of the design to kind of park that little blue button in there.
Okay, so that you push the little blue button that was immediately behind R2, and that would pop the lock, and it would fold back up.
That's right.
And then just beyond that was a bigger blue button that you would depress, and it would create the sound effects, and it would cause that little flash light at the tip of the front.
Yeah, right on the nose cone, you had that little light.
Blink red. So yeah, there were so many elements to it as a kid that I thought were so cool because it had the sound effects, it had the little flashing laser light at the front.
Oh yeah, plus you had that wonderful Black & Decker drill sound that was supposed to be a laser that was unique to all Kenner Star Wars toys.
Uh-huh, exactly. It was such a cool design. You know, they nailed the look of the X-Wing perfectly, even though the scale was much smaller, you know, for the price point and all. And I know it's such a simple thing, and probably wouldn't be a big deal to anybody, but again, to a 5-6-year-old, it's a big deal. I thought it was so cool that you could actually fold down and fold up the front little leg to park it.
Oh, yeah, a little landing gear.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool that, you know, you just pop it down and, like, you could park it perfectly on your shelf when you weren't using it.
Well, and I'm not embarrassed to say that, you know, as a 12-year-old, 13-year-old, 14-year-old, 15-year-old going forward, when you're flying those suckers around the house and it's time to land on the little island in the kitchen where the trash compactor is.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm seriously like a real trash compactor. We had one in the house. When you get to the kitchen, that was the landing platform.
Yeah.
Was this little island in the kitchen. And when you're landing your X-Wing, you want to be able to drop that landing gear down, you know, at any age.
Exactly.
Mine saw mileage, too, I want to point out. They all, my vintage X-Wing, which is my original one from the 70s, hangs from the ceiling of my studio today, but it did see action in its day.
Yeah, it's such a cool, number one, the X-Wing itself is such an iconic vehicle. I mean, anybody in any country will probably recognize it, whether or not they've seen Star Wars, because it's pervaded the pop culture so much. But the fact that this figure, again, captured the look perfectly.
Absolutely.
And it just had all these little things to it that was fascinating to my young mind. You know, it wasn't just a simple, you know, we have X-Wings, you know, like you were saying earlier, like with the Death Star, they actually molded all the little fiddly bits, as you say, into the X-Wings, you know, even to the point that once the foils popped open into X-Position, they actually still had all the little details etched into the insides of the wings. They could have easily left those blank.
Oh, yes, that's so true. And let me take a peek here real quick, because this has not made it to the ceiling yet.
Yeah.
I am proud to report that breathes true, as it were, the largely to most disappointing Poe Dameron X-Wing.
Yeah.
That is replete with things that make it disappointing. I'll give him that. It does have detail on the interior of the S-foils.
Oh, okay. And this is
the touch.
I completely forgot I used to do this until just this moment. But I remember doing this as a kid, that the little hatch, you know, where the blue button was that you depressed to do the sound effects on it, you know, that was the hatch for the battery. So you pop that open.
Oh, that's right, yes.
AA batteries would go into there. Well, when I didn't have batteries in there, I would leave that hatch open, and I would have my Jawa ride.
Nice.
Piggyback.
Like a rumble seat.
Yes, it was the
Jawa
rumble seat.
And no, I am not old enough to remember rumble seats. I just know what they are.
Oh, no, I know, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
before anybody starts thinking that I'm that old, okay?
Yeah, I would use it as a Jawa rumble seat, exactly.
That's
so
perfect.
I would have these adventures where Luke would be on Tatooine. He would pick up this stray Jawa that he was trying to rescue. The Jawa would hop into the X-Wing, you know, and of course he didn't go down all the way, just his legs up to his waist, so his arms would be forward so he could kind of sit there in the little battery holder, and then you had R2 built in, and then Luke, and they would just take off having adventures. So I completely forgot I used to do that. I did that on a regular basis, completely forgot about it up until like 2 minutes ago.
Well, like even the back of the X-Wing.
Yeah.
Back in the rear section, it had all those little things going on, all the tubing and...
Yeah, well, isn't that where the speaker is at? That the sound would come out of? I can't remember.
I'm not really certain. They never really made it obvious where the sound came from, but since it was just this annoying buzz,
yeah,
I don't think they ever really worried about it, because it would resonate right out of that plastic.
No, maybe so. For some reason, I thought there were little slits in the back where the sound would come out, but I could be remembering it wrong.
I am glad that you mentioned, though, the that vintage X-Wing, because as much maligned as the Poe Dameron X-Wing may be, with its silly rubber nose cone for who knows why, it does invoke so many aspects, at least this initial release one, of the vintage. And that there's like a BB-8 that's built in.
Yeah.
That you depress to open the S-foils.
Oh, okay.
There's a little gray button right behind BB-8 that you pull back to unlock.
Was it? Is that what I just heard?
That is actually what you just heard. This is This is opening, and that's closing.
Oh, okay. All right.
Just close that on my face there. The only big difference is the BB-8, at least the head, is a little more, is painted and detailed, but the body is detailed but not painted. But you can actually rotate his dome.
Oh, nice. Okay. That's interesting to know.
That will soon be hanging from the ceiling along with the new TIE fighter.
That's cool. Yeah. Those aren't even on my watch list right now, so I wouldn't have known about all that unless I actually handled one of someone else's, out of someone else's collection. That's pretty cool to know. So yeah, the X-Wing, that's going to be my is that my second? Are we just on number two?
Yeah, we're on number two, so we got to step up our game here. For my number
I guess it seems like more, because I kind of cheated and added in a couple.
Yeah, you kind of folded in a bunch. And we have been rather waxing poetic about our
favorites
thus far. So for number three, I'm going to go in with a modern toy that is the Republic gunship.
Oh, nice. That's a good one.
It's kind of a twofer in its own right. Because the Republic gunship, one of the things that impressed the socks off of me, apart from the size, I mean, this was one of the last big ones.
Uh-huh.
One of the last just gigantic things that was made. And, though actually I stand corrected, because there were some other episode 2 and 3 vehicles that were still pretty good footprint. But what was neat about this is it's got these little side doors on a wonderful mechanism. I can't really fathom, because there's no visible springs or anything. But you push this button and the two side panels open very slowly. They don't just like pop. They're just kind of like, okay, we'll just kind of open up here. And they open and they slide back on little arms.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got the tandem pilot seats You've got these swiveling guns in the front.
Yeah.
They took some liberties, as has to be the case, because these things are never to scale. So, like, the side guns were, I think they may have been completely non-existent, because if you bought the Episode II Republic gunship Pilot, he came with this weird-looking spherical laser cannon that was actually supposed to represent, because it was designed to actually slot into this toy. And so, you know, they kind of figured you're going to buy two of them, one pilot for each pilot seat.
Yeah.
So you would ultimately wind up with two of these little things that would represent those side gunner bubbles.
Yeah.
Only in a tiny scale. Because the two wing gunner bubbles are also represented on the toy, but in two tiny a scale for a figure to fit in. If they did this to figure scale, it would be colossal. Mm-hmm. But it's got, you know, these two giant cannons on the top. It has so many elements going on. And then later on, they came out with this deluxe gunner figure for the that would still slot into the same place that the little accessory piece did, but it was a gunner with a full-size bubble.
Mm.
So if you bought two of those, if God forbid you could find them at the time, you could actually have gunners in their bubble, in their the side gunner bubbles.
Yeah.
I did eventually find two of those at a price I was willing to pay.
Hmm.
And so you wind up ultimately with a nearly movie accurate piece, albeit too, you know, kind of small. But it's
yeah.
The fact that there's so many elements of this thing that were put in, where like the gun turrets are on a ball, so they swivel 360 degrees. You've got, you know, the two pilot seats. You've got the opening doors and the potential to upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this was a very well thought out piece, and it kept getting re-released throughout
did it?
The Clone Wars. They did the Flying Tiger version.
Oh yeah.
And then they did another one where I can't remember if this one had the original head or not, but I think there was one version where they put like painted in all these little stencils of different shapes of droids.
Hmm.
Where it's supposed to be like, you know, where World War II pilots would have, like, you know, if you had a confirmed kill, you'd have like a Japanese flag or a German cross, you know, indicating who you took out. But it was just, that one to me is just such a neat, because it's a big piece, but it's got a lot of fun little elements in it too. So it has a lot of play value for the kids. It's got a lot of fun display value. And the fact that that it was designed to be accessorized by exactly the, you know, by the pilots and the gunners down the line. And, you know, what you needed was already built in, the little slots for those things. And it's rare you have that kind of foresight with stuff where, you know, somebody's really thinking ahead for that.
Yeah, exactly.
So the Republic gunship from the Episode II collection is
a good one.
Another popular piece for me.
Cool. Awesome. My number three is going to be a little bit off the beaten path, but it's definitely falls into the category of toys, and it's something that came out in 1977, maybe 78, and it's something I did have as a kid and had it for quite a while and kind of wish I still had it as part of my collection. I'm not sure exactly where it ended up, but that would be the plush R2-D2.
Oh, wow.
And the plush R2-D2 is very simply just a stuffed animal R2-D2, but it had the moving legs. The only thing that wasn't fabric were the little joints in the legs that caused the plush legs to move back and forth.
That's right. It had like a big plastic post run through it.
Exactly. And you could squeeze him and he would, of course, beep, or really kind of honk more than anything.
Yes, Kenner and sound effects were often...
They were. They really were.
Odds.
It's a bit of an unusual choice, but I was trying to think of one thing that was really, really unusual that maybe the listeners wouldn't see coming. And that's definitely something that I did have in my toy box for quite a few years. And maybe Vic knows where it ended up. Maybe by chance he still has it in the collection. Maybe it got sold in the garage sale over the years. Who knows? But I think my sister Jennifer actually ended up with it for a while. You know, once she came to appreciate as a little girl R2-D2 Star Wars a bit more, but yeah,
and R2-D2 for that matter.
Exactly. But you know, as far as choices go, it's an odd one. But I'm just going to throw out there the R2-D2 plush.
I like that. That's an unusual one because you don't really think about the vintage plushes beyond the Ewoks.
Yeah.
And that one's really unique because of that odd plastic element shot through it to allow the
uh-huh.
legs to move and to make it a little more unique.
And again, I wish it's something I still had. And like I said, maybe I can cross my fingers in hopes that Vic actually had held on to it, because I really don't know what happened to that thing. But maybe, who knows, maybe one day I'll get another one added to the shelf. Who knows? So that's my next choice. It's a quickie one-off. So there you go.
Nothing wrong with a quickie one-off.
Oh, wow. Didn't intend for it to go that way.
Yeah, there you go.
Was that choice number three? Is that three?
Is three.
Okay, so we're on four. Yeah, okay. Cool. Okay, so you're number four.
Number four, I'm casting about because there's so many places to go with the Kenner Hasbro stuff and the and then other things as well.
Yeah.
And I'm looking all over because I'll think I've settled on something and then something else will be like, oh yeah, there's that.
Oh yeah. I was the same way in getting ready for the show.
And I think what I'm going to have to go with, because I never had the vintage version, and essentially this is a facsimile thereof, and a good reason not to invest in the vintage one, because everybody wants the sky for it anyway, there was a playset put out, gigantic box set, that I was very hesitant to buy until I finally, thank goodness for the internet in this case, I finally stumbled upon an image of the thing unpackaged. Hasbro had a tendency to, about the same period, they were doing these exclusives, and they would have this just paper-thin plastic that they would use, the kind of almost cellulite plastic that nobody uses anymore. A good example of this was the Lars Family Homestead, because it rested on a base. It was a wonderful replica of the entranceway to the family homestead.
Mm-hmm.
And a great prop piece that came with some figures and such. But it rested on top of this awful paper-thin plastic base that was supposed to be, you know, the desert sands.
Mm-hmm.
And actually included a little depression, so like if the figure went through the door, there would be like a little bit of a step down to a table that was made of solid plastic. And I was afraid that the dome itself was made of this, but the house itself is made of solid plastic. In a similar way, there was this other set used that same sort of god awful plastic to essentially be a presentation piece, thankfully, within the box for a Sarlacc pit with Desert Skiff box set.
Mm.
And underneath that awful plastic was a solid plastic, heavy solid plastic Sarlacc pit.
You're going to say Rancor.
Yeah. With this, what's really cool is the Sarlacc pit itself is solid plastic, and then there's a rubbery Sarlacc that sort of plugs in underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got all the downward facing teeth and the gaping maw and some little tentacles coming out, one great big long one, presumably to wrap around characters.
Yeah.
And you have the option of displaying, this is what made it really clever, of displaying it pre or post special edition.
Oh, okay.
So you can have your classic version, Sarlacc.
Yeah.
Or you can plug in the Feed Me Seymour Audrey 2 mouth.
Uh-huh.
And have your special edition version.
Okay, okay.
And then it came with the skiff using the original mold from the vintage one. With a much, you know, the modern paint job where they're, you know, adding little
blast
points.
Marks.
Yeah, and all these other little elements to make it look more used. But it's the exact same mold.
Oh, nice. I didn't realize they used the same one.
Yeah, it is identical. It even has, like, the little drop-down plank, walk the plank.
Yeah, yeah.
Board and the drop-down sides when, you know, Jabba's henchmen can go flying off and do a Wilhelm.
Me, of course.
And the little movable rudders.
Mm-hmm.
And the steering posts that actually act as trigger mechanisms for things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really cool because it's like finally I can own this piece that I always wanted. And it was just, Circus World wanted a fortune for it, and that was the only place you could find.
Circus World, wow. Wow. Now that's a name I've not heard in a long time.
Indeed. And what's really cool is, years later, there was a Jabba henchman, a Klaatu of some kind, or a Nikto. I think it was a Klaatu character that came with a big-ass laser cannon.
Yeah.
That had this weird little clip on its post. That clip actually, you can actually clip that onto the rail of the skiff.
Mm-hmm.
See, again, it was one of those, it was that period where they were accessorizing everything brilliantly. That's why I hate with the Episode 7, this stupid build-up, who knows what accessory. I would rather there be some movie-specific accessory in that package if you're going to burn the plastic like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why there was a period in where Hasbro was throwing in really neat accessories with things. I think we talked about that on the last show. But what's really cool is this one skiff guard or one Jabba's Palace character came with this little gun that was obvious it was designed to clip onto the... So in my display, I've actually got that clipped on, so you've got that gun right there at the front.
Mm-hmm.
And just this wonderful added value. And it led a lot of people to really hope that Hasbro was finally going to do Jabba's sail barge.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was the gunner who comes and... Or the henchman who comes and plops that gun onto the rail to shoot at the skiff.
Yeah.
So it's a figure of him, so everybody's like, oh, finally. And like, no, that's not going to happen. So the that box set, minus the sleeve that went over and made the Sarlacc pit look cheesy. So if you've ever seen this, like, in a show, found one at a price you'd be willing to pay and you've been tempted but you think that it looks crappy and you're like me, you're going to open it, rest assured now that this is worth your while, because underneath that crappy plastic sheath is a really cool hard plastic Sarlacc pit playset.
Nice.
So the Sarlacc pit and slash desert skiff is a set.
That's good to know. I didn't realize it was a replica of the vintage, so I kind of want that on. That's on my wish list now.
Ah.
And if I were to get it, I would definitely do it pre-special edition Sarlacc, minus Feed Me Seymour.
Yeah, the only reason I kept mine on display that way is because it gives an element in the display where you can see that there's something there.
Now...
And I have my skiff on a little acrylic riser.
Yeah.
So it's like it's floating above the Sarlacc pit.
So when you take Feed Me Seymour out of it, what's there? Is it
That's a good question. It's been a long time.
I just wonder, it's not going to just be a hole, is it?
Well, no, because it's got the little downward-facing teeth.
Yeah.
It's got rows and rows of them, and they're actually molded individually. Like, that's why they did it in rubber.
Nice.
So you have, like, layers and layers of these teeth. I'm going to see if I can... Maybe it's too difficult to unplug that piece here.
Oh, well, yeah, we don't have to worry about that. But that, so what figures
do actually,
they come
you just
with?
Wind up with a big gaping hole. At the.
Oh, you do? So it probably looks better with the special edition creature.
Yeah, the Phoebe Seymour is like a... The base of it's just sort of a circular plug almost.
Okay, okay.
And the only reason I was willing to yank this out is because everything had fallen over anyway. I've got to reset.
Oh.
I'd forgotten, yeah. But, I mean, unless you're just like right on top of it.
Yeah.
Without that, you get that nice little layered, you know, rows of teeth descending into little descending circles of teeth.
Okay.
So you actually get a nice looking little piece there without it.
That's good to know. I may have
switch
tracked to
those down. Non-Feed Me Seymour now that I look at it.
I'll have to track one of those down. That's pretty cool. All right, let's see. Number four. This is where it's going to get tricky. I'm saving a good one for number one, so I'm trying to figure out which of these two I want to go for number four. And one's a playset that I've kind of sort of talked about on the previous show, so I think I'm going to go with my other choice, and that's going to be the Unleashed Han Solo Stormtrooper.
Ah, very nice.
The other choice was the Star Wars Droid Factory. I kind of talked about it when I talked about the R2 with three legs, so I'll leave that one alone. But the Han Solo Unleashed, it's funny that you started the show talking about these Unleashed figures.
Oh, it worked out well.
Exactly. This is one of the ones I was really happy to get my hands on. Number one, I've always been intrigued by the fact that Luke and Han actually went in disguise in that original movie. I remember as a kid that fascinated me that... Well, I was already fascinated as a kid by the Stormtroopers, by their design, by the fact that... It was unusual to get, like, something, a bad guy that was in stark white, the way they were. Everything was so white and clean with them, except the Sand Troopers. But it always intrigued me that in the story that they actually had to dress as Stormtroopers and go undercover in order to rescue Leia. And that always intrigued me, still does to this day, and I think that's part of the reason why I'm obsessed with Stormtrooper armor, is because the fact that the heroes got to go incognito that way, I suppose.
Yeah.
So that was always a big thing for me. That was a big thing for me when I never got my hands on one, but I always wanted to get the Luke and Stormtrooper disguise vintage figure. And again, it never popped up in the stores that I would.
That one was a tough one to find because that was Power of the Force 2.
That was the tail end of stuff when they were just dwindling down the figures. So I was really excited to get the Han Solo Stormtrooper through my Applejacks, you know, proof of purchase, mail-away thing. But the Unleashed figure is cool to me because I had originally came across the Stormtrooper Unleashed figure, and anybody who knows me knows, like, two things I love to collect are the Troopers and R2 units. So I kicked myself because I saw the Stormtrooper, and I passed on it. I went home, and Colleen said, "You know, every time you do that, you regret it. Why didn't you just get it?" And I was like, "Yeah, you're right." Went back. Of course, it's gone. So I didn't get a chance to get the Stormtrooper. But later on, they came out with the Stormtrooper Han Solo, where obviously it's the same. Isn't it the same mold as the Stormtrooper? I believe it is. I think it is. It's just the fact that you can remove the helmet, and he had a different base. He had the trash compactor base that he stood on. And
yeah, so, it was the same, essentially the same mold.
Okay. And so when I came across this, immediately I remember, you know, I was there, and inevitably I heard Colleen's voice in my head, "Don't pass it up." And so, yeah, she oddly sounds like an old 50s.
Yeah, girl. That's weird.
Yeah, it is, really. And so I got it, and I was really excited because like with you, immediately I open up everything. I don't keep anything in the package, so I opened it up and I, you know, got it together. And it's still one of the main centerpieces on my trooper set. You know, sometimes I'll display it with helmet on, sometimes I'll display it with helmet off. I think it's really cool that they had him on that Sarlacc base, because what was cool about it is it had the Sarlacc. What am I saying?
Diagnoga base.
I know. I'm thinking tentacle here, and so it's all the same to me. So the diagnoga.
As long as you say tentacle.
Yeah, exactly. I know.
That's the most important thing.
Because the tentacles coming out of the trash, you know, and I thought that was a nice element and everything. So that was a welcome addition to the collection. You know, I don't have very many Unleashed figures. I have like maybe 5 or 6, but that was definitely, out of the Unleashed figures, that one is definitely at the top of my list as my favorites. And oddly enough, number 2 also has to deal with tentacles. It's the Boba Fett one. Because he's on the Sarlacc, you know, and the tentacles come out of that one, too.
Yeah, so that one is one of the few Unleashed I own.
Yeah.
That was so... I mean, that's what we all saw.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Boba Fett's getting out of there. That's the bottom line.
Exactly. Right. Oddly enough, and I remember when I got my Boba Fett Unleashed, it was funny because I was doing, like, this little Rudy Poot show I was actually set up at, selling, just trying to get rid of collection stuff. And it was a slow day, and no one was showing up, and so all the dealers were just desperate just to do something, so we were just starting to do trades. And this guy had the Boba Fett Unleashed figure, and he was also a big Battlestar Galactica fan, and I had some sort of really no kind of demand, worth nothing Cylon figure, something or other, that I was like trying to pass off, just trying to get rid of. And he was like, "Hey man, I'm a big Battlestar Galactica fan. How about you come over here and just pick out anything on my table and we'll make a trade?" And I was like, "How about that Unleashed Boba Fett?" "Yeah man, cool." And you know, and he,
that works out. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So I traded off like a $5 Cylon for this Unleashed Boba Fett. So that was
very nice.
Yeah. He was happy. I was happy. So it was all good. But I know that's not Han Solo. But anyway. So yeah, the Han Solo Unleashed figure would be my next choice.
Excellent. As I'm as we're wrapping up here, there were so many things that were, you know, there was a Walmart exclusive Jabba the Hutt with the throne that was brilliantly done, and a few other things that were just nearly in there, and I was trying to sneak in some extras, but I had to settle on a piece that didn't occur to me at first, and then I thought, no, this is perfect. Sideshow Collectibles, of course, has done the big 12-inch, did tons and tons of 12-inch Star Wars figures.
Yeah.
And then they started doing something rather clever, and that was to accessorize their line, their Star Wars line. They did some neat things like a couple of different packs that enhanced Jabba's palace, or a 3-pack of the Darth Maul, you know, flying tracker droids.
Yeah.
And a little table and chair from the cantina for Mon Mothma to sit on.
Mm-hmm.
I think they even did the like the alcove for Han and Greedo, so Han could be the only one firing.
Yeah.
But one of the really cool things they did was in the 12-inch scale, the Jajaric chess table.
Oh yeah.
Complete with die-cast metal figurines of all 8 creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, at the time, the first and only time anyone had ever realized those creatures as a collectible.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been fascinated by those guys. Because it was just such an unusual collection. I've seen pictures of the original puppets, the original animation puppets, and it's just, I always loved that, and this came out, I had to get it. At the time, I didn't get it when it first came out. Sideshow used to do a thing where a lot of stuff that they would release, if you bought it from them, they had a Sideshow exclusive version.
Yeah.
And the Sideshow exclusive version would have, like in this case, an extra chess piece.
Mm.
And what that chess piece was, the one creature holding the other up over his head before throwing it down.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So he had those eight pieces plus a 9th one that represented 2 of the characters. So you could just sort of like disappear them from the mix and have it on, if you displayed it, you could have it where you're at that point in the game.
That's nice.
Yeah,
I like that.
Unfortunately, I don't have that version. I bought the non sideshow or the non-exclusive version.
Yeah.
But still very, very happy with the thing, because they did a great job in this tiny scale of capturing the look of all of these creatures.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of them are a little bit awkward looking in that scale, but for the most part, you get all of the little... They paid a lot of attention to some of the fine details. And it would be, you know, a year or two later, the collectible miniatures game actually produced miniatures of all 8 characters.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're almost accurate scale to be life-size compared to a life-size Jurek table.
Yeah.
But I've always felt that, you know, I wished that Hasbro had embraced those characters. I would have loved to have them. I even had all this worked out where you could do release 4 2-packs of those creatures in the scale to the regular action figures.
Yeah.
But each 2-pack would come with a quarter of the chess table top.
Yeah, of course.
As a little plastic base, and then you could put the 4 pieces together, kind of like when they had the Jedi Council sets.
Yeah.
And that would form this wonderful little base. You could use them as either these, you know, here are these creatures that can interact with your figures, or you can use it as a chess piece. And the other little clever thing I would have included in the design was to have the church key, or the little keyhole. So if you so chose, you could snap the whole thing together and then hang it on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Because each piece would have that little keyhole in it.
Hmm.
So, like, if you only got 2 of them, you could still hang it on the wall. Because to me, I think what would be really cool is to have the chess table where you could have the option to hang it on the wall, that element, and then display your figures in front of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Instead of standing on it. But the Sideshow's chess table from the Millennium Falcon is literally a centerpiece on one of my display shelves.
Mm-hmm.
It's flanked by a lot of other cool stuff, but I just, that to me was like the Bantha. That was one of those things that I just always wished I had.
Yeah, of course. You know, this will interest you, and you may want to jot this down to track this down for your set, since you're a big Jurek fan. The Star Wars miniature sets, the Masters of the Force sets, actually came out with the Jurek creature pieces.
Is that from the miniatures game? Collectible
Yeah.
Miniatures game? Yeah, in fact, I mentioned that earlier. I may not have made the connection there, but yeah.
Oh, gotcha.
The ones where it came with like a little card for all the game stats?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I actually...
you did mention
that. I tracked down all 8 of them. They are nearly the accurate scale to be life-size. Mm-hmm. For an actual Jurek chess table.
That's cool. Nice,
I wish someone would come out with like a, you know, holographic version of them. But yeah, that was where I will conclude, because as we both discovered, this is a very difficult thing to...
Oh yeah, definitely.
...settle upon.
Okay, so it's down to my fifth choice. Okay, this is definitely one that got a lot of hours of playtime, a lot of enjoyment out of this piece, and a lot of adventures with this piece, a lot of many, many good memories, and that would be the Kenner Han Solo Blaster, the role-play blaster.
Oh, wow, what a great choice.
And I tell you what, the reason being is because, again, I've mentioned many times in the show that even though I relate to Luke Skywalker, I always wanted to be Han Solo. And on the playground, when we'd all rush out to the playground for recess, I always had to be the one to call Han Solo. You know, I had to, you know...
Oh, everybody wanted
to. Yeah, exactly.
Yes,
and
I mean, I was the same. I literally related to Luke in many ways.
Uh-huh.
Damn, I wanted to be Han.
Exactly. I think we all did. And so when Vic and I finally got the Han Solo laser pistol, that was a big deal. I mean, to pop those batteries in and to use it for the first time, and it had that little secret button on the handle. You know, you had the trigger, but then you had that little secret button that was on the actual handle.
Oh, yes.
That would create the, I guess, like a secondary laser sound or something. It had
that's right. Yeah, you had like high speed and low speed drill sounds.
Exactly.
Like one was like the drill and one was the screwdriver setting. Because you don't want to try to set a screw at 10,000 rotations per minute or something.
Mm-hmm, exactly. It had the scope. It had just an awesome sculpting job. You know, the
and
knob.
And it was before you had to orange things.
It was, exactly. It was. Yeah, you could still get shot by a police officer using one of these things because it was all black. Because they thought, you know, you're carrying a real gun. The nozzle had the little holes drilled into it. It wasn't like, you know, they could have easily been cheap and just got the nozzle and just did little dents to indicate.
Yeah, they could have just pocked it or could have just gone with the non-Greedo killer version.
That's right, the non-Greedo killer. Yeah, but, you know, they went through so much detail, you know, on this thing. The handle, the front of them, everything about this thing was just perfect. It just...
Well, even down to the using the little, the battery cover.
Yeah.
Integrated, like, the little, just the knobs and stuff on the side of the gun.
The dials, loosen it.
Thing I didn't really like about it... you know, as an older kid, was the fact that it had Star Wars emblazoned on it in silver.
Oh, the great, sticker?
Great sticker on the side.
I don't even think that
and
lasted.
Later, the Empire Strikes Back would be
That's
emblazoned
right.
on there.
I think I could be wrong, and she'll probably call me out on this, but a good friend of the show, Crystal Star, I believe the one that she owns is the Empire Strikes Back version, if I'm not mistaken, but I could be wrong about that.
My original one, I did not like that sticker and peeled it off.
I think mine came off not on purpose because I just played with it so dang much that it eventually just wore off and peeled away.
But I did replace that with an authentic Star Wars piece mm-hmm. that has the gun that has the actual Star Wars logo on it.
There you go. But I'll tell you what, this thing, of course, this was back in the time where you could take toy guns to school and not get in trouble.
that's another good point. Wow.
Like, you talk about becoming a popular kid in your class real fast. It's when you'd go out to recess and you'd dig out your Han Solo blaster to take to the playground. I only managed to do it once or twice. But yeah, that made me really popular really fast because everyone wanted to... have the Han Solo pistol out there, but
in fact, another local cosplayer, Taffeta Darling, actually borrowed my my Han Solo pistol for a few days for an event
when she did Dr. Sketchy's.
Yes, that's right. Like, very good.
Yeah, she was one of the things she did was Han Solo. That's correct. She did track that down and got that from you. So
the call for a one of those, and you know, needless to say, this was a difficult show to do because there were so many things to choose from.
Oh yeah,
and I think we can squeeze in a little time real quick and do an honorable mention if you'd like.
Oh my gosh, okay, I'll have to think quick. So you go first.
There were a couple of choices here, but I think I'm going to give my honorable mention to a mail-away modern figure that was later re-released as part of a three-pack, so it has a higher place of honor in the deluxe line, and that's the Bomar Monk.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Because the Bomar Monk was so unlikely.
Was that not one of my choices? If it wasn't one of my choices on that episode, I think it was on
no,
the list.
No, it wasn't.
To be
it
oh, okay.
Came up, but yeah,
that's
Bomar
funny
because
that was definitely on the list.
Because they did the big bellows abdomen thing.
Yeah.
In rubber, where the rest of it's in plastic.
Yeah.
And what was really cool is the Bomar Monk when it was released, and I may get this wrong here, but I'm pretty sure when it was released as a mail away.
Yeah.
The dome in which the brain is, they stained the bottom of it in blue.
Mm-hmm.
But when it came out as a three-pack, they stained it in red. So there's actually, and the color, the plastic colors are a little bit different on both of them. So they mm-hmm. were able to kind of maintain that idea of, you know, here's this exclusive mail-away.
Yeah.
And I mailed away for a ton of those.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, they were all mailed to... In my history, I had them all mailed to work, which happened to be the Dallas location of Diamond Comic Distributors, which by the time they finally started shipping...
Oh, no.
was closed.
Oh, wow.
So a bunch of my Bomar monks probably still sit in the dead letter office to this day.
Oh, wow.
I don't know what they did with those things back then.
That's actually a very tragic tale.
Isn't it sad? I mean, I did wind up with a few of them, but I was trying to really stock up. And then, of course, when they released it with the multi-pack, it was the Bomar monk, Bubo, the barking frog creature.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
With his little chain, and then the wool cabochite, which was the thing that tries to lick C-3PO.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the Bomar monk, I think, gets an honorable mention because, I mean, they built this thing on these spindly legs that you had to actually put them together. They're like two-part legs that then plug into the body.
Mm-hmm.
It has all of these just chock full of elements, at least with the mail-away. You had to assemble it yourself, I think, in the package when they factory assembled it for you. Mm-hmm. But the fact that, you know, it's on these spindly little legs and it stands very nicely on its own. It doesn't sort of collapse under its own weight. So that is my honorable mention, which actually, unfortunately, is an action figure one, so I'm kind of breaking my own rule here on this one. But I wanted to get that one some coverage.
Cool. Awesome. Well, since we're doing honorable mention, and I have to think on the fly, I'm just going to go ahead and go with the aforementioned droid factory.
Oh, there you go. That's a perfect one. Because that was,
well, I did talk about on the other show the three-legged R2-D2, but I'm just going to go ahead and bring this up again and talk about the rest of the playset, which I didn't talk about last time. It's just design-wise was really cool because you had it had the whole look and feel of Star Wars. Number one, you had the ramp that went up to the platform, then you had the steps that would go down into the little droid factory area. All your droid pieces would fit into nice little slots. You know, it had all these sorts of little pegs to piece things together. It had that crane, that awesome crane that to a kid is a big deal because you can move it around, and with the hook you can actually, well, it wouldn't actually on its own pick things up, but you can attach pieces to the crane and move it back to the platform to build things. It had even like a little sidestep on the side of the
oh, that's right. Yeah, like a little stairway thing.
Yeah, a little, I guess it was supposed to be like the little, maybe like a little control center off to the side.
Well,
I'm not sure.
That's right, yeah, because there was one, that little place where you had a foot peg.
Yeah, it just had like one little peg there. It was like one step, and I guess that was supposed to be like the station where the person would sit or stand.
I guess whoever was running the crane there could.
Yeah, exactly, because there wouldn't be no other station for them to stand at because everything was droid parts and around.
Right.
But it had a lot of figure pegs built into it, so you could actually display quite a few figures on it. And, you know, aside from the three-legged R2, you know, he had a lot of pieces that you could actually piece together to make other droids, like droids you never saw in the movie. You know,
exactly, and four-legged droids and weird.
Yeah, we were talking off mic earlier of the what's currently out now, the Star Wars Smashers or whatever they're called.
The Mashers.
Mashers. You can interchange their legs and arms and heads and torsos to make other, you know, like mashups. Well, this was like the Mashers of the day, I suppose. You know, pieces, so you could come up with all sorts of configurations for the droids. You know,
the suggested configurations were always bizarre.
Yeah, I think you can actually, you could, I'm not sure if you could actually interchange the R2 pieces with some of the other pieces.
Yes, you could, because you had the barrel of the body.
Yeah.
You had that third leg, you had the two side legs, and you had the dome, and everything was either had its own pegs, or you had these weird little two-sided, like double male plugs.
Yeah, that's right.
That you could plug into different things. So you could actually put R2's head on some weird bodies.
Yeah, it came with like 12 little double-sided pegs, like you were saying. So I guess, yeah, technically you could piece together R2 in a new configuration. So, for my honorable mention would be the Droid Factory, and I know it got re-released as Jabba's Dungeon and something else after that. I forgot what the third release was. But my choice would be the Droid Factory.
Okay, and I'll just say quickly, in keeping with the theme, honorable mention would be, I think it was called Collector Fleet.
Mm-hmm.
Where it was about the time that Playmates was doing all the Star Trek ships.
Mm-hmm.
And Kenner briefly tried to enter into that with a great Star Destroyer and a Rebel Blockade Runner, and later a Super Star Destroyer, which was poorly realized. But the Rebel Blockade Runner is wonderful. It's like about 12 inches long. It's probably closer to 14 or 15 inches long. It had all of the engines in the back lit up.
Mm-hmm.
And even some like little window holes in the front lit up. And it was really cool, but it had piss-poor sound effects because Kenner never could quite manage to do the sound effect thing. So we'll go ahead and make that my non-action figure honorable mention. It's my show, so I can get away with it. And with that, we have gone well over long. I've kept Eddie well over beyond his original expectations. So
right. That's okay. We're talking Star Wars.
So
it's allowed.
We hope that we've invoked some memories for everybody, some brought back some of their own childhood and some of the wonderful things that we all kind of encountered. The backstory, I think, is really one of the reasons we chose to do this top 10 and perpetuate it, is because it's oftentimes those little backstories that add so much to the figures themselves, the toys, the collectibles, what have you. It's how you found them, the chase, the hunt, the little memories of why they're so important to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And with that, we will see you next Sunday on the Rancor Pit Live, and be back here in 2 weeks with more Simple Tricks and Nonsense.